Welcome to another Rock the Prototype podcast episode. Today we will focus on agile testing. We will learn more about important roles and activities for successful software development. And who is better qualified in explaining this important topic than someone who's an expert in this field? I'm very glad we have Lissy Hocke in our today's podcast interview. Lissy, please introduce yourself to our listeners.
Hi, everyone. I'm Lissy. So first of all, thanks for having me. It's a pleasure to be here. So I've been working in the testing and quality field for like 14 years now. And I did have the fortune to start at a very little startup and hence be introduced very, very quickly into agile ways of working. And that really, was quite crucial for the ongoing career then afterwards. So I usually work with product companies, which is also where I mostly thrive, usually embedded in teams, hands-on. Yeah, this is basically my happy place, and that's also where my context is coming from.
Great. This Rocks Prototype podcast interview with Lissy Hocke will deliver you an important insight into agile testing. Just a quick overview about our today's topics. You'll get detailed information about agile testing principles and learn more about roles and functions in an agile testing team. We will shed light on agile testing strategies and methodologies and what's needed to organize agile test management and test planning. About that, we'll reflect testing tools and test automation, and we'll discuss challenges and success factors in agile testing. So lean back and enjoy another episode of our Rock the Prototype podcast. Lissy, why is agile testing essential in today's software projects?
So I think there are so many answers to that question. My personal one is, of course, biased from my own experience. Now, what I learned in those 14 years is that usually we don't have all the answers up front. We will always learn on the way because there's a lot of uncertainties in front of us. It's quite a complex area or domain anyway, software development. So as we anyway have to learn as we go, as much as we can think about things up front, I do believe that an agile way of working, which is basically all about learning and adapting to what you learn and then trying your next step and iterating, is crucial to not only be faster maybe than competition, but also basically doing the right thing. Because how could you know, or at least in the context that I've been working, we wouldn't have known what is actually providing value, like real value, to the people who in the end use a product and also then benefits back to the organization again. We had to discover it on the way because we had a lot of hypotheses, what would be needed or what would users like, but usually something else turned out on the way. So continuing to learn and continuing to adapt to what we learn, from my point of view, is very crucial to, yeah, not only in today's world, actually. I think it's quite a fundamental thing to approach life.
I totally agree, and I'm very lucky that you said it this way, because I think it's always ongoing challenge in many, many companies, not only in Germany. It's a worldwide challenge. And if we turn about agile testing and the background and basics, what is agile testing and how does it differ from traditional testing approaches?
So there is an official definition, basically, coming from Lisa Crispin and Janet Gregory, which is great. I can only encourage people to look it up. But what you'll get from my side is, again, based on my experience. So as I mentioned, I had the fortune to start my career in tech actually in a very, very small startup with everybody having to learn as they go because, yeah, there was no one more experienced anyway. So from that very start, when I also started testing, I learned as I went. And as I said, adapted and iteratively we went ahead. But right afterwards, I ended up in a completely different setup, in a quite huge corporation, being outsourced to work there. They had a very different approach to think about quality and testing. I wouldn't even say it was like waterfall or V model or whatnot. It was more, bureaucratic, highly structured, but not really effective, unfortunately. So this is where I saw the biggest contrast between like the approach as learn as you go that I had before, very lean and very inexperienced, of course, as well, but then ending up in a very, very big project as well and very big company and seeing a very formal approach to testing and quality where also like everything was different. And this is where I can base my comparison between like agile testing and also a more traditional approach. The one big thing that I've seen is in a more traditional approach, people try to think about everything in details up front. Think of like huge Excel files with test cases. Do this step. I expect this result. Did it happen? Yes or no? In a lot of detail, like really down to clicks and interactions and whatnot. And you try to think of everything, but of course you didn't. And also it was testing at it was more like used as a phase in a big year-long project, usually actually more than a year. It's like, I think when I started there, it was already running for 1.5 years and then a year on top, I was still not finished. And testing was like maybe 2 weeks here. And then later on, they tried a more iterative way. But again, testing was like, oh yeah, you have 2 days in the end. But it's not really... Again, this is just based on this specific experience and other projects and other approaches might have worked completely different. I also know experience reports where these kind of things can really work out well. For what I experienced, it wasn't the right approach for the situation, what had been used. And it wasn't leading to the value in the end that everybody was looking for and to solve a problem our users had. And it wasn't solved compared to the experiences I had around it, like my very first one, or also afterwards, we saw a lot more, we had a way closer feedback loop. So you learned a lot earlier with less investment as well on where we're heading. Are we heading in a good direction? Is it worth investing more in that? Or should we maybe pivot and try something else? So this kind of, this is for me the meat in the difference of what is more or what I consider more agile testing, where it's all focused on learning and feedback, fast feedback loops, and trying to continuously do better and find out more with a lot of agency as well and autonomy. And like you can really have a lot of impact compared to what I've seen as a more traditional approach where everything tried to be upfront planning, people being kept separate as well, not allowed to talk to each other. So back then I was even told, like, you must not speak to developers. And I was like, how should I even do my job then? That was for me the biggest comparison. And as you can imagine, given that experience, I am rather personally a fan of the agile testing way of things.
Great. It really calms me that you mention these challenges, because we all know that our work isn't always running that smoothly like we would like to have it. Or yes, it's reality. So what are the principles and values that agile software development should have for you?
So I think I already touched on like the continuous learning and fast feedback loops. But I do think underlying that is also trying to find the next right thing to do, and not that you should planning ahead, right? Like, what's the next step, the most valuable thing we can do next, and try to solve it as simple and lean as possible, and only then gain the data from it to move on. But in order to do that, actually, it does take a lot of, I would say, courage. Courage and autonomy and stepping up. Because with Agile, a team, for example, a product development team, was put in a different position and also power. Or at least in the context that I've been working on, we always had all the skills that we need on the team. So really cross-functional. Whenever we didn't know something, there's ways to learn. So we always try to keep all the skills that we need also in the team and not have it outside. But that also means we can do a lot of things together when we want to. So we can instantly go the whole way. Of course, there are some constraints sometimes, like maybe the team doesn't have all infrastructure permissions. But actually, within our scope, I believe we should have, because I really saw the best results when the whole team was not only responsible, but also enabled to own bringing an idea completely to production and also seeing how it goes there and operating and supporting users and everything, which also provides really a... How do you say it? Maybe a sense of, satisfaction, yeah, and pride as well, because you know what you've done, right?
Totally.
You see the feedback and the result.
I totally agree. Now we are right in roles and functions of agile testing teams. Within software development process, different actors and stakeholders take place. Lizzie, what different roles and responsibilities do you usually work with in the field of agile testing?
Yes, interesting question. So I would say the most common roles had been, of course, this people who call themselves developers, engineers, whatever, but basically people who build a new thing. Then there's usually people who look ahead on what to actually even build and why it is a problem that we have to solve for users, more like a product point of view. That had been, if they call themselves product owners or product managers or product designers as well, or analysts. But usually people in that, having that focus, not limiting them to that, but basically having that focus. And then it depended always on what else is needed. So maybe sometimes we had a person who rather brought in skills from an infrastructure point of view, an operations point of view, that you would probably might call a DevOpsy person, let's say, to bring that knowledge into the team and also enable everybody to do better when it comes to operating a software and running things and also having way more tooling support. But for example, in the team that I'm right now in, what we also have on the team are medical experts, because right now I'm working in healthcare and we're building a medical product. So it's actually really great to have the actual people who have that knowledge on what to look out for and what is important for this domain right in the team. So you really have these very, very fast communication pathways. And and don't have to wait, like, I don't know, for rolling out something and then later on realizing, oh, it's completely different, like the undesired thing. And especially when it comes to medical and healthcare, that is very much appreciated.
I can totally agree. I didn't know that you also are involved in this healthcare sector, as I am present as a IT architect. And it's a very challenging environment because it's very regulated, and the agile commitment is improving, and it's very important, and I'm very glad that it turns
absolutely
this way.
Agree.
So, what would you say? How do these roles work together and complement each other in agile testing?
So, I've seen different forms of collaboration in these kind of cross-functional teams. When I started out, I was very much a specialist in the team and doing all the work regarding that specialty as well. Like, for example, something was, you know, ready to be tested, I'm going to test it.
Yeah.
Something was requiring input on what kind of quality aspect did we, you know, still need to include, or what kind of risk do we need to consider? Then I was called on, and not only called on, but I never hold back as much, so I'm always proactively putting myself into that and contributing. But it was very much with me alone. And as I progressed over my career, I learned a lot more how to share that work across the team, because these things are actually quite fundamental. And it doesn't mean that everybody needs to be an expert in everything. It's not going to happen, and that's okay. And that's why we have different people on the team as well. But sharing fundamental knowledge and skills, like how can you even know it's working? Or how can you figure out what kind of surprises might be lurking in that change, that one liner thingy that we just pushed, right? This is something that is super valuable for a lot of people on the team. So starting to share a lot more and move into a more holistic way of testing and quality was basically the theme over my last years. The more senior I grew, the more my team actually took over the most of the work. So, which also then freed me up to think ahead, because there's always a next thing to look into more, to look more into our architecture, or focus on security, because it's again a specialty that not everybody instantly knows, and that needs to be spread across the team. Depending on your context, different things will be more important, of course. But to enable the whole team to do the fundamental things has been the theme for me the last years, and it was very, very effective in a way that, again, you have a lot faster feedback loops if you remove a bottleneck in a flow, right? And the bottleneck was me, because I was the only person, the only role in the team, basically, doing the same task. So everybody always had to wait for me, or I had to be super quick and, you know, instantly looking ahead, doing all the work. But I'm also on vacation sometimes. I'm also going to be sick sometimes. And or busy with something else. So it's not very resilient if you have such kind of a bottleneck in the team. Now, in my current team, we're all owning testing and quality, and that changes dynamics really nicely. It doesn't take testing away from me. I'm still able to do all the stuff that I still love, but everybody has a lot more knowledge and capability to do good things. I can grow myself as well. The whole team is growing. So collaboration now doesn't look like handovers we had back then, or we started pairing and working as ensembles, so the whole team working together. Nowadays, it really flows a lot more naturally. Whoever is right now available is just taking on the next review, and that includes everything. So, yeah, even in this space, it can change dynamically with different teams and different stages of maturity, I would say.
I totally agree. And I also have experienced that the cross-functional knowledge share is very, very important and too often not the way it should be. And this is a very important aspect for me as an IT architect to identify core components or technologies and to discuss early how to continue in, maybe based on specification or to clarify specification. But what do you think are very relevant challenges and best practices when working in an agile testing team?
So I think the challenges are usually around culture. I mean, there's also technical challenges, of course, but if you have a good culture already in place, well, we can figure this out. This is then rather the easy and fun part, I would say. And granted, not to invalidate, because these kind of challenges can be big too, right? But the challenges that I faced most is whenever I entered a new team, is the fundamental culture of that team. Like, how are people behaving? How are dynamics within a team? Is a blame culture going on, for example, which can cause a lot of toxic impact in also behavior and all kind of dynamics? Or are people kind and supporting each other and continue to learning together? There's a lot of things you can observe when seeing a group of people starting to work together, and hopefully it's not staying with it just a group of individuals, but becoming a real team can make a whole difference. But it's also hard and does really take a lot of time and patience and constant effort to get there if you're not having the luck to already enter a super nicely running team. And usually, well, it wasn't the case for me, let's say like that.
Can you give us some agile testing strategies and methodologies that should be essential in today's software projects?
So I think there are, it's a very interesting question because it so much depends on context. Maybe that in itself is already a practice that you have to like adapt to the context that you're in. Because what might have worked in a previous team, you try to copy paste it, well, it can work out, but it doesn't have to. So being really context sensitive is one of the things that I would always highly recommend, even if it's sometimes not easy to do, because it also involves our own biases, to unlearn things that worked in the past but might not work here, and to deal with change as well. Besides that, more generically, let's say, what I've seen essential for testing in a more agile way is to be able, well, it's basically two things. One is more the exploratory testing side of things, where you really, which is basically one of these, well, the core of exploratory testing is also learning. So it really fits super well in the agile space that you go in small steps and you don't plan huge ahead, but you take a next step, you see the results, you have the next idea, you act on it based on the insights. That kind of way of finding things out in very short time that are valuable to whatever information we need right now and whatever decision we have to make right now, this kind of way to test is extremely important as we move on into the future from my point of view. It's more like an approach to testing. And it doesn't exclude automation either. That's the thing that also it's getting more known in the last years. And I really think it's going to be even more crucial in the coming years, that basically use whatever tool you have to find out more of that valuable information. And of course, we can always test everything, but not everything might be as valuable. So to be highly effective in your usage of time and usage of tooling that you have available, including automation, but also all kinds of other tools like proxies and whatnot, this, I think, is quite generically valuable in a lot of contexts, or at least I haven't seen a context yet where I wouldn't say that.
I see. I understand. Lizzie, let's discuss if explorational testing and automatic testing are contrasting or supplementary concepts. Maybe you can tell us some pros and cons of each method and give some examples so that it gets clear for those methods supporting software quality and user experience.
All right. So exploratory testing is, as I said, an approach that is really focusing on learning valuable information so we can make better informed decisions. An example here would, like, let's say you have a new API endpoint that was just implemented or that you're about to implement, whatever it is. Let's say it's already there and you want to figure out, okay, what kind of surprises are lurking there? Maybe you already know, maybe there are security concerns, or let's say around input validation, these kind of things. So, of course, you could come up with certain things up front and realize, okay, what if I not provide this header? What if I provide a fancy value in this field? But the thing is, instead of just coming up with, like, I don't know, 100 things to do and then just moving through that script, you just start with the one next thing that you feel like, that could reveal interesting information for us. And you see what it does. And maybe it does give you back like an expected value, but you also observe at the same time that the status code that was given is like interesting because it's not what you might have expected. So this is not part of a script, but you can basically observe a lot of things around it. Or whenever you call that, and on the surface, everything looks good, but the logs are, you know, going wild and returning a very interesting error that wasn't even surfaced, or whatever it is. So this kind of way of approaching things, trying to see very quickly a lot of information that is interesting to us, this is what I mean by exploratory testing. Now, contrasting to automation, so the more classical, because now what I just described with exploratory testing, this is, you need a human, right, to interact and to instantly learn in that case, in the case that I described. But now automation comes into view. Now, the more traditional view of what people mean by test automation is often like you already have a certain behavior in mind and you check for it. Does it really happen? Yes, no. And that's fine. It can take a lot of the regression testing load. And yeah, but you're basically checking for what you're already knowing without really varying it too much, let's say. With this, again, this has a place. This is fine. But now, does this exclude each other? No. You can also do both of these approaches side by side, everything good. But the magic will happen if you combine both of them. So they're not exclusive to each other from my point of view. Because thing is, imagine if you use that automated test you just wrote, maybe a unit test, just testing one function, very small. And you have a state that is already committed as a regression test. But you can also use that for exploration and figure out, okay, what if I provide a different parameter? What if I try this? What kind of behavior will our system then show? Or this kind of implementation, even the tiny bit. And on the other hand, also, if you add automation to the API testing case that I just mentioned, what if I use tools, basically automation, to not only send this request once, but I send it just, you know, maybe 100 times in a very short time frame, or I mix it up? What kind of interesting result might that reveal? Again, it differs on context, what kind of things or ideas might make sense. But it's usually very interesting to see how our systems actually behave. And these are the things that are often not intentionally looked at.
Of course. Maybe you can give a clear statement for listeners that are not that familiar with testing at all. Do you believe that test-driven development and behavior-driven development are still relevant?
So, yes and. These approaches are really... they're really valid approaches to how to design a solution or an implementation and move into the right direction earlier without producing as much waste. But this is mostly around how to make that change and on implementation and design of your code. So at that point, of course, you can also already test. So for example, if you're using test-driven development, you're writing usually... you like whatever you want to implement right now, you have an idea, how should it behave next? So you write that test, you see it fail, you write the related behavior, test should pass, right? And then you can also improve things, of course. With behavior-driven development, it's similar, just on a bit more abstracted point of view, so that you also have, like, for example, more businessy people be able to specify a sort of behavior from a more user point of view, and then you can break it down same way. Again, both of these, I think, are still valid in the sense that they can help you get to the needed solution way faster and have very, very frequent feedback loops. And again, I'm big on feedback loops, especially in Agile. So I think they are valid. I don't think you have to use them. I've seen a lot of environments where people are far from ever even trying them out for real, because both of them really need learning and investment to figure out how to make the most value out of them. And just having like a BDD framework, for example, in place is not cutting it. It's about the approach of how you think of the expected result first before you even start implementation. And that's often... well, at least in the teams I've worked in, this was usually not the case.
Okay, thank you so much. And what about continuous integration and continuous delivery? How do testing and feedback loops fit into this context?
Yes, also here, I've seen quite a varied range of what it means when people say continuous integration or continuous delivery. Most of them did not really meet the meaning that the authors of these terms had in mind, where you really constantly integrate into a mainline, basically, all the changes that you have, and you constantly see even the tiniest changes and their impact. What I've seen people use these terms for is rather that you have tooling around in place to still make those changes more possible, but it's usually a lot bigger chunks and they're usually staying separate for a longer time. Still in testing, again, it's a lot of focus on feedback loops, and the shorter we can keep those feedback cycles and the earlier we learn about if something is working or maybe breaking or maybe not compatible with another service or another system, the better, because then we can move early in the right direction. So continuous integration and continuous delivery also to the end users is very, very crucial to keep those feedback loops, all kinds of feedback loops, as short as possible.
Thank you. That's a clear statement. I totally agree. Let's turn to agile test management and test planning. How is testing planned and managed into agile projects? Maybe you could give an insight how your team setup is and how or why you practice your approach that way.
Sure. So you might have guessed it's not much upfront planning, but rather at the latest responsible moment when we have the most information that we actually need to plan the right thing. So an example would be for us, well, we have an idea, we have a new feature in mind maybe that we want to include in our application. And the whole team, the whole cross-functional team is already sitting together and thinking about this idea and already basically testing this idea in their heads already to figure out, okay, how can we know that this is working in the end when we have it in production? What kind of things are we missing here right now? How could we actually solve this? And what about the aspects of that solution? What kind of impact does it have? And so on. So we're already starting at this very point of a vague idea to test. Maybe people might think like, ah, that's not testing. But for me, anything where we learn invaluable information from, I see as testing. So yes, you can intentionally also test an idea.
Absolutely.
And then when you move forward, of course, the more you know and the more fine granular your like the implementation of that idea gets, and then maybe also with the first iterations of a solution, you can then continue testing all the way. But in this initial ideation phase, this is where I think is the most planning happening, because everything else then on the go, you always take whatever you already have in place, and it could be like a first iteration, as I said, of an implementation, and see what you can find out next about this state. And this continues onwards until we have things in production, and it doesn't stop there either. Even if you have the fully thing, you can still plan and think about what else can we now learn. Maybe we can gain more information for the next changes again and start the planning of ideas here already. So it's not really planning in the more traditional sense of that I would have in my head of like, I don't know, I take a whole month of planning ahead, a project of 3 years, or even a change initiative that I would plan more strategically. The most planning that I've seen is really around the idea and how do we architect this solution and what kind of implications does it have. And that's done by the whole team.
Lizzie, what can you tell us about the importance of testing as an integrational part of the sprint and release plan?
So I think this is also answered by feedback loops. Testing is a red thread throughout everything from my point of view. And that's why it's so important that everybody has this in mind and also has skills to do it, and not just one person on the team. And again, I started out at that point as well, but now in the last years, I've seen so much benefit of really the whole team keeping that in mind, because then we can really make it this integral part of what we plan out to do, of a release that we cut, because then you can start very early on testing those ideas, testing those small bits. Then also, of course, test whatever you bundle as a release, hopefully small and frequent, but you know, it's not always the case, especially in regulatory environments. And then move on forward on production and also test there and continue testing production, which you can do every day. And testing production, I mean, like, of course, in a safe way, but still you can gain a lot of important information also from there. So for me, it's quite an underlying accompanying red thread across everything.
And what insights would you give us to adjust a testing strategy and priorities during the development process?
So I think the overarching strategy is often not changing too much. It's more like the tactics that we're using during the actual implementation. So maybe we thought, okay, this change, we expect we can test this in this way and everything, like at least to have a starting point, and then we can figure out more as we go. But the main core here is to stay flexible and to still adapt to the actual situation that we're going to face, because we can't know about that. We can't also know how our system is actually behaving in that way. So to stay flexible and to adapt to whatever is coming and to see what else is needed, or maybe less is needed than expected. Maybe it's already fine enough, and we have that appetite for the risk that might still be there, which is fine. Then we can also cut it shorter. So it's about staying flexible in the moment and really thinking, whatever I do now or set out to do, would it really provide value? And when it doesn't anymore, like we learned enough for now, let's move on. Let's get that the next feedback loop earlier again.
I understand. Let's reflect agile testing tools and automation again. What tools and technologies are typically used in agile testing? Can you give any recommendations what tools we should use?
Yes. So I'm a big fan of tool-assisted testing. And tools can be so many different things. I think there's a whole category of tools that you might not have in mind at first, because also our brain can be a tool, just really deep thinking or pen and paper to visualize something. But it also can be, of course, software tools. So little helpers that can assist us during whatever challenge we have. And it could be stuff like, for example, what I've seen very, very commonly, for example, in API testing. Well, there's a lot of really nice and powerful API, like REST clients, for example, or if you're using GraphQL or whatnot, whatever your interface is looking like, there's usually some tools that can assist you to see more. So anything that helps you looking under the hood and what's really going on, also like any kind of tool to maybe collect the logs across several microservices, or other things that show you how much resources a Kubernetes pod is right now consuming. Anything that gives you more information for whatever you're looking for will help. And that's also why, for example, personally, I also love running things locally, because in some settings, when things are deployed on test systems, it's really hard. Like it really depends how much we can observe where. And some organizational settings I've seen where it's getting really hard to see anything under the hood when things are deployed. But when you run things locally, you have full control. Of course, you shouldn't stop there. Just a disclaimer here. But basically, coming back to that question, what kind of tools and technologies? Everything that helps you see more is valuable. And any new tool you can learn and figure out, if that is useful in your context, you have them in your tool belt. So you can, whenever you encounter maybe a similar case next time, you have that already in your tool belt. You can pull it and learn more. But tools really range from, as I said, like brain, pen and paper, visualizing things, to also Excel sheets and whatnot, but also to tools like proxies, like software tooling stuff, or mimicking maybe slow network connection, intercepting requests, whatever, next to, or maybe you write your little bash or shell script for yourself for a specific case. So command line tools are also super, super relevant. And there's so many out of there, all for different purposes, right? So it's more a matter of staying open to learn more tools, not being afraid, having the confidence that these things can really help, and then piecing them together to whatever context you right now have.
Right. Thank you. What about test automation? What are, from your experience, benefits, limitations, and challenges?
Right. So I think the main benefit is if you have automation in place that's valuable, then it can save you a lot of time. And it can also, for example, when it comes to regression testing, things that you already know should work and you want to keep checking for them, that's perfect for automation, of course, because as a human, we wouldn't probably use our time with doing the same things over and over again without learning something from it. Humans are perfect for learning more, but automation can do all the, let's say, repetitive, boring stuff. But that doesn't limit us to only regression checks. As I said, also tools can, I don't know, do little helpers, for example, like, oh, I need to reset my test environment to a certain state, or reset, or maybe I want to inject certain test data into a database so it can start testing then based on that. Automation is perfect for that because, again, it's repetitive. You can just use it all the time. It's wonderful for saving time in all aspects for us. The limitations and challenges. So limitations, it's only as good as a human wrote it, right? So I've, and that's also one of the challenges.
Sure.
Yeah. I've seen automated tasks so many times just pass all the time and nobody ever seen them fail because they can't fail. So these kind of things are still tripwires. So that's definitely a limitation. Just because something looks like green and nice and working, it doesn't mean it does.
Yeah.
It's just looking for that.
The developer should never be the only one testing the software. I think you would agree on this.
I would agree that it really helps to have a second person looking at it. I don't mind whatever role they have. So I've seen so many developers doing an amazing job with testing. But it's really hard to test your own stuff. And I see that same thing also with myself. Whenever I introduce a change, I believe I tested everything. Everything's good. And then another person looks at it and like, oh, damn.
Exactly. That's what I mean.
Right?
The integration of testing tools into the CI and CD pipeline is an important part for me as an IT architect, as it supports teams winning time resources when that works and minimizing errors and supporting a high software quality. So what tips do you have for those that haven't started with this yet? And what are the indicators for you of an advanced agile testing team?
So I think if you are at a state where you haven't started having a pipeline at all, or maybe really only having no tests in the pipeline at all, I think it's really about time to cover at least something. And I would definitely start, for example, with unit tests to get people up to a state and to train them and educate them and inspire them also to make them see the benefits that they get out of that fast feedback. And yes, pipelines are very important for that fast feedback. So yes, if you have a team, and I had an example in my past where a team was just really new to development and they came from a very different area. They were awesome people. They just honestly didn't know. But whenever people sat with them and like took time, they were really moving fast and seeing all the benefits of the good practices that other people already learned over years. Like, for example, integrating these kind of feedback loops also in pipelines, which is great. The indicators of an advanced team, I would say, I think two main things. So one indicator for me is always like, how is communication and collaboration right now working in the team? How well is it flowing? Are people just talking once a day, maybe like at a daily stand-up or something, saying one sentence, reporting back in basically, and that's it? Or is it a constant flow of like, constructive, very tight communication, basically, and collaboration where people help each other out and they jump to support. Whenever there's a problem, everybody's instantly showing up and bringing all brains together. This makes a huge difference in what kind of outcome you can expect from that team, like people working in silos, very shut. Compared to a highly collaborative and supportive and kind team that has a really good culture, even if they haven't figured out everything, they can build up then the confidence that they can figure things out and solve the next problem at hand because they're not alone in this, they're together. And that is really the strength of a real team. So this is for me a huge indicator of a more advanced team that are more tightly knit and helping each other out as they go. And that includes testing and quality aspects as well.
Thank you. I agree with your wordful statements. Teamwork and collaboration in and between teams is essential. That leads us to challenges and success factors in agile testing. What does shared responsibility mean for quality in the agile testing or above?
So I think this is also a part of what I mean with a tightly knit team who are really supporting each other, because in such a team, no matter what kind of expert role you actually have, you maybe you're a developer or maybe a product owner or a quality engineer or whatever it is, that you don't limit yourself to that role and that expertise, but you really share it across the team as well. Because all these separate parts, they also relate to quality, the quality outcome in the end. Do we actually provide value? Do we provide something that is also safe to use? Whatever is important for your context. A product designer has a way different perspective on things based on their experience and their training and what interests them most compared to maybe a security person on the team. That might be a different thing, but we bring these kind of perspectives together. And the more diverse, actually, the better, because then we have a lot more information to draw from in order to influence the quality outcome or the best one that we can have in that team. So shared responsibility for quality is, for me, that everybody is also bringing in their perspectives and their skills and expertise on the table, enabling others to do fundamental parts as well. Like, for example, a more DevOps focused person to enable everybody to know, okay, maybe we have Kubernetes in place. What does it actually mean? How do I do certain basic operations on that cluster? Because then if people are more enabled and more skilled, they will also consider all these things while implementing, for example, their solution. So they have that already in mind. And that is, for me, heavily impacting
Definitely.
Quality.
Yeah,
as well.
I'm very glad you said that. These are very important things for me. And how should we deal with limited resources and time pressure?
Yeah. Oh, this is it's quite a constant challenge that we all face, right? There is only so much time and capacity. Energy is also limited. And if we go across that, well, we will burn people out. And I hope that is not the goal of most people. And if it's the goal of your organization, we'll get out, definitely. So how do we deal with that? I think it's really important to make people see that whatever you choose to work on, there is an opportunity cost. So we can, maybe there's 10 options. If we go for one, we will not be able to do the other 9 at the same time, which might be okay. It's just being more intentional about the choices that we make, and to not commit yourself to maybe a year-long thingy instantly, but maybe say can we find a leaner way to just validate the hypothesis that we have here? Maybe just with to gain first data, maybe let's have just a very simple thing up front. Maybe it still will take us maybe a week or 2 weeks, but it's not as much as a year, right? So, and then we can already put it on production and gain more information from it to realize, is it actually worth investing our resources and the time that we have available or not? So maybe we have to try something else. But then we also didn't invest 3, 4, 5 months into something that actually doesn't have any kind of return on investment here.
Absolutely. Absolutely. What tips can you give us to improve communication and collaboration between developers, testers, and other stakeholders?
So I actually have a whole talk on that. I think there's a... So over the last years, I sort of collected my toolbox of things that really helped in my context. And yes, if people are interested to hear more, there's actually a recording online of that talk. There's a lot of stuff that I learned over the last years that had been proven very, very effective in my last years, in my last teams, to establish that culture of communication and collaboration so that in the end, people have a chance to thrive together. And we also, the product has a chance to become a quality product and for quality to have a chance to emerge, basically. Because again, I've seen this as the fundamental thing for everything. If the culture isn't there, well, you can work as hard as you might, but it's not going to happen. So yeah, I think I'm going to defer the question to you. If you want to have, if you want to know more, check out my talk.
I'm looking forward to it. Lizzie, what trends and future developments do you expect in the context of agile testing?
So I hear a lot of people talk about AI and machine learning and large language models and whatnot. So I do think realizing what kind of implications this means, also the ethics coming with that, the biases that we have, this is going to be definitely continuing to be important, to be able to understand what we're dealing with and where the risks are and what to look out for. But that's just because this is a general trend right now. And also people are already working on these things, right? So even if you're not wanting to opt in that direction, well, you're being confronted with these kind of products already out there. And again, they can have also really big impact on everybody. So this is one of the things that I see. The other one that I see is, well, I think when it comes to the job market, I don't have a complete overview. So this is, again, it's biased on just the conversations that I had with other fellow testing and quality folks. I think that more companies are asking for automation again, maybe not really knowing what they actually ask for, what they actually need. But I do believe that something everybody will need more and more is to be really open to learn all kinds of new tools all the time. And that also includes learning new programming languages and developing your technical skills from wherever you are, step by step, to the better. I'm not sure if there's a future in testing quality for folks who don't really want to look at code. I do hope there is, because I do know a lot of awesome people who would love to stay in that field. But I honestly don't know if that's going to happen or if these people will then rather emerge into other roles that we also dearly need, like more product-focused point of view or different kinds, or maybe user research or other areas. But of course, also these areas are areas of expertise and need further training and learning. But I really think one of the trends that we see, the more people are open to use new tools and learn as they go and always develop also their craft skills when it comes to to very close to the implementation and developers. I think this is something that will continue to grow and keep people being able to find really, really valuable stuff and great contribution to the teams.
Great. What advice and tips do you have for companies that want to implement agile testing?
I think one of the core things is around culture again, because yes, I've seen companies having an idea of what it could look like if you like something they're looking for. It might not always fit to what people think or what I would think when I get into that company. So my advice would be to stay open, to bring good people in and to learn together as you go, and rather enable the people who are actually doing the work instead of constraining them too much in reasonable boundaries, of course, but basically to enable and empower the people, to provide them a safe space, to try experiments, to figure out how could it look like at that company that might not have been in that area. Especially they they're already existing, right? They already have a way of working, and it so far worked for them, but it seems there's a need to move on. So you have to stay open to try new things and also to give people a chance to actually try these things out. So that's, I think, the main advice I have for companies that have that are not yet there and want to learn.
I absolutely agree. You've given a valuable closure of our talk about agile testing and the essential environment and agile mindset needed. We're nearly right at the end of my questions for today. Let's try to draw a conclusion so far. Present knowledge and skills of different teams, it may be more or less easy or maybe even difficult to embed agile testing into software development, but it's worth any efforts and it needs to be done. Well, for sure, agile testing is effectively contributing to the goal of software quality and improvement, and it also is a very powerful method to improve usability. Related to the present knowledge and skills of different teams, it may be more or less easy or maybe even difficult to embed agile testing into software development, but it's worth any efforts and it needs to be done. What conclusion would you draw for today, Lizzie?
I would love to encourage people to think freely on the next step and what is possible, to try new things, try new approaches and see what works. And then again, learn from whatever they observe and try the next thing, because this kind of experimentation approach, the continuous learning, this is all fundamental for agile ways of working, including testing and quality, to bring the whole team really together, to have that holistic approach to testing and quality, which doesn't mean only all the time from idea to production and everywhere, but also by everybody. So in summary, I think learning, adapting to what you learn and make that feedback loop as fast as possible always, I think this is the key insight. And yes, it's not limited to testing and quality, but there we have a powerful means to provide that fast feedback.
Thank you. This is a great conclusion so far. Last but not least, we are coming to a very personal interview insight in our podcast episode. I want to ask you as a guest three personal questions. Mm-hmm. First, what would maybe surprise us that we would not typically expect by you?
Oh, a few things come to mind. So first of all, I'm really introverted, and I heard a lot of people like, no way, you're speaking everywhere and whatnot. But I am, and I love people, but I do need some time for myself to recharge batteries. So that's something that sometimes people don't expect at all, which is quite interesting.
I wouldn't.
See, I'm super introverted, actually. The other thing that I often get surprised looks on is that I love computer games. I've always done them since I was very little. I grew up with tech, basically. I just love computer games of all kinds of sorts. And yeah, that's also something that not many people expect, unless they saw me already in person, because probably you will notice at some point. yeah, that's a real a passion for me.
I share it too.
Nice.
question two. A thing you would never miss.
A thing I would never miss. This is a more tricky one to answer. Again, here, a lot of things come to mind. I'll take the one that I realized in the last years of the pandemic that I really, truly missed. And that is my sport. I'm playing volleyball, indoor volleyball. And I've done that for so many years. Like, it's a huge part of my life. And having a forced break was quite hard, although very understandable, because you really can't protect people with that kind of sport properly. So it was good that we had the break, but now that I we could, again, slowly take it up, of course, in safe constraints. That made me really realize I just don't want to miss it. I really hope I still stay healthy enough that, you know, I have a whole life ahead still and still be able to play that sport.
I also agree. We play volleyball on Sunday, but I haven't played it for years, and it's just a fun game. Question three. Who should we invite as a future guest to our podcast?
Oh, there's so many to choose from. But my wish in general, it's not a concrete person, but my wish would be to find all the different people they are, with all their different beautiful aspects. So someone who is maybe not fitting stereotypes or your typical viewpoints, someone who is not represented as much as they should be, because there's so many people out there who are not yet seen and heard. And I would love the next guest to be someone like that, who's not yet seen and heard as much as they should. And also here, there's a lot to choose from.
That's really nice and a great idea. And I try to fulfill this wish, and I'll accept this challenge. Well, a big thank you, Lizzie, for being my first Rocks a Prototype interview guest today. I loved this interview. And Lizzie, do you have a blog where we can find additional tips?
Yes, I do. My site is lizziehocke.com. So we can also link it probably in show notes.
Of course.
This is basically my main spot where I also have my blog and recommendation of resources. And I write about personal challenges that I'm trying to tackle, all these kind of things. So it's basically the hub for everything else.
Thank you so much for sharing your valuable knowledge and insights with us, Lizzie. Great to have you on board our Rock the Prototype podcast. Thank you.
Thank you very much. It was really a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
As always, you can find all information in the show notes and on our website at rock-the-prototype.com. In our next podcast episode, we'll focus on IT security topics. Don't miss it. Whether you're a more experienced developer or just diving into the world of programming, Rock the Prototype is a place for you. So subscribe to our podcast now and let's rock software development and prototyping together. If you have any questions or need more information, don't hesitate to reach out to me. Thanks for listening, and see you on board the next episode of our Rock the Prototype podcast. Your Sascha Block.